No, listen.
Okay, I'm listening.
This is the 23rd episode of this podcast, of this season.
Of this season, yeah. Yes. It's not. How many episodes do we have in total, by the way? Do you know that?
40 plus 5 plus 23 or something.
It's a lot, right?
Yeah. It is. It is. Wait.
I've also tried to find it, but
I could.
It's
clear. I know how.
Tell me.
We have an API endpoint on podcast.cachiv.com.
Oh my god! You can just count.
If you go to /API/episodes, guess what?
What?
You get the whole items list. It's 67.
Oh my god! Two more.
Two. Six.
Nice.
Yes. 67. That's quite a lot. Wait, I said it wrong then. No. Yes. I can't count, guys.
Yeah, it's difficult. I get it.
Developers don't have to count. They have a machine to do that for them.
True. But we have 67, so that's why we have, how do you call those in English?
Guirlandes.
What? how do you call those things?
It's a flag garlands. Okay, maybe it's just, yeah, garlands.
Yes? Yeah. It's just like, I feel like I've heard, like in movies or something.
Okay, it's not a garland.
All right.
Garlands are, wait, how do you call these things?
Slingers.
Yeah, but in English. If you look it up, it's garlands.
Huh.
Schleuderer.
Streamers?
What? I'm a streamer.
I don't know.
I think it's just called, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's weird, right?
Yeah.
A festoon.
What? A festoon?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I think it's garlands, but it doesn't sound right.
Yeah, like usually garlands are made out of other materials.
Or maybe normally they say put up the birthday decorations and then, you know.
Yes.
People assume.
Bunting, streamers.
Yeah, streamers.
Daisy Leaf and Eat, garlands. Yeah, that's what we're trying to say. Garlands don't sound right.
Yeah.
But so streamers doesn't, bunting. Bunting is the right word.
Bunt cake?
Hmm.
That's the thing, right?
Bunt cake. I love cake. Yeah, bunting, I guess, is the best word. But I think that's more British.
Again, I never heard it before.
Yeah, I never heard of it either.
Well, maybe because we're not native English.
If I ask my American girlfriend, she'll probably be like, what?
What? It's called Slingers.
Yeah, well, she is learning Dutch. But I don't know how to segue this from the previous topic.
So we have 67 episodes, and you know what would even be better?
68.
100%.
Oh.
That's what...
Yes.
Yeah.
If we achieve 100% Lighthouse core.
Yeah.
Which we did on a lot of projects.
Yes.
Mm.
Like if your website would still work right now, you had 100, right?
Yes.
So... that's, you know, kind of interesting that you don't have a website, so we can't show it.
Why would you want to show it?
You know, it's like a mythical number, you know, a mythical.
Just look at podcast.cursive.co.
Yeah, or look at my website. It's brand new.
Well, there you go. There's a lot of 100%.
I'll link it in the description. I need some traffic, you know.
Okay. That's fine.
But yeah, what's it called? It's podcast.cursive.co, right?
You don't know your... Oh my
god. No, but I just don't remember if it's like with an S or it's a singular or plural.
Do you have plural podcasts?
Oh yeah, that's a good point. All right. So yeah, you can go to podcast.cursive.co and I'm going to check it. I've never checked the Lighthouse score, so I'm...
It depends.
It depends on what? The weather?
Your internet speed.
Oh.
Like if you have it on Wi-Fi.
Oh no, I get a 92 accessibility, so that's not a internet.
What happens?
Speed. Form elements do not have the associated labels.
Where?
There is an input somewhere.
What happened?
Wait, where's the input?
Oh, I get browser errors, but that's because I have a
ad blocker. Think it's... Oh, interesting. No, the speed. The playback speed.
That's a new one.
Yeah, that doesn't have a label. So here, that's a nice example of how this works. So just a little recap in case people don't know what Lighthouse is, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's from Google, right? Lighthouse.
Yeah, the original algorithm, if you want to call it, or the technique is called Google Lighthouse. And they have their own website too, by the way.
Yeah, they do. But I think like most developers use it in the development tool when you're in Chrome, at least, like, you know.
I sometimes use the online version.
Do you also have it for Firefox, maybe, as a plugin? Or?
Probably nowadays.
But you can go to the website. That also works. But
the website does different things.
Oh, so
that's kind of interesting.
One, like I always use it in the Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so it like scans your application or website. It refreshes the page and tries a few ports. And it tells you how you can improve your website. And if you're, you know, if you've done a great job, you get 400% scores.
Yeah.
And then you're done with life. It's
you've achieved
bliss.
Bliss, or you've like ascended.
Ascended, yeah.
Yeah.
Into the Google heavens.
Look, I like to Google things.
Yeah.
And this is another definition. It's an open source automated tool for measuring the quality of web pages.
Wow.
It can be run against any web page, public or requiring authentication, apparently. I mean, the technology behind it is open source and people can take it and make plugins and stuff. And some people actually have combined it with Next.js.
Whoa.
That's pretty cool. Did you know that when I build Next.js websites, I have the Lighthouse plugin inside my Next.js. So when I build, it gives me like a notification of like, oh, there's some stuff going on.
Yeah, Vercel does that too, right?
They have their own thing.
Yeah, but
do they have Lighthouse internally?
Yeah, I think they do.
They have something like Lighthouse, but I don't know if it's actually a Lighthouse.
Yeah, they have. It's called Speed Insights.
Yeah.
But it also does, I think, check visual stability, whatever that means.
Ooh. Speed Insights is...
Uh-huh.
Also from Google.
Yeah, here you go.
Oh, that's called Page Speed Insights.
Oh.
I don't know.
I don't know either. But like it's comparable, I guess. But then after each build, I think, or it like monitors automatically, it will tell you how your application is going.
Yeah. And what you said before, like the 4x100%, it's like the four categories, the four pillars that it checks. And
they are?
Yeah, what are they?
Tell me.
I'm looking it up.
Oh, okay. It's performance, accessibility, best practices, and SEO.
Yes.
And then if you have a web app, I guess, you also have a PWA category.
Yes.
But that's not, you know, mandatory in this.
Yeah. Depending on what you're building.
Yeah, of course. It's just for most sites, those first four are more than enough. And then if you have 400%, you get nice confetti or fireworks.
Woo!
Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at our Twitter, at Cursive.
Wow, Twitter. I haven't used that in
I should say x.com nowadays.
Oh, God. Fuck X.
Right?
Is it x.com?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I am already regretting opening this. Yeah, if you go to our Twitter.
Yeah, and if you scroll down a bit, or maybe at the top, there's a video of us achieving 100%, and you see the confetti. So you can see what it feels like. Imagine seeing that.
So just in case you will never achieve it yourself, you can still see how it looks.
Exactly.
Nice.
Here you go.
I see it. Wow.
It's beautiful. But that's pretty interesting that you pointed it out. We just tested it again on the podcast website and we only got a 92 for accessibility because apparently I missed out on some of the form elements.
There was also another point.
But let's not go into that.
Oh, God.
Because we don't have a lot of time and we want to talk about a lot of shit.
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah,
tell us, how do you achieve 100% Lighthouse score?
That's the whole thing. In 2023, when I want to build a website, I don't just open Notepad. I used to do that. I used to just open Notepad and be like, HTML, doc type, something, something. Like, you don't do that anymore.
No.
Nowadays, you choose a framework, but frameworks are pretty heavy usually. If you just pick vanilla HTML and CSS, you are in control. You're in the driver's seat, and you can choose how much of your website is actually like given to the user, to the client. All the files you're sending to the user are just manually selected.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Are you going to make a very, very simple website without any kind of like animation, interaction, anything that needs a framework nowadays?
Yeah.
You probably want to go vanilla HTML and CSS and some like vanilla JavaScript. And that will, you will be in the driver's seat. There are some other issues we can talk about, like assets, optimizing images, lazy loading, all that kind of stuff, which some of it is, has been alleviated because there's now native lazy loading. Assets, you do still have to like optimize your images and rescale them and sort of different sizes depending on the resolution of the client.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of like this kind of work to be done if you do vanilla HTML CSS.
Yeah.
But you're serving something that's 100% completely purposefully selected for the client. So I'm an advocate of like using the right tool for the right job. And if you can get away with it, go with vanilla HTML CSS if you want 100%, because you'll actually learn how to do everything correctly. You'll serve only what's necessary.
Yeah, I think for the most basic sites, it's the easiest to also to achieve a 100% Lighthouse score if you have like all the control over it.
Yeah.
It's just as soon as you start adding, you know, complex JavaScript, then you will have a lot of trouble doing that on your own. I mean, it's possible, I guess, but it will be pretty tough. And a lot of frameworks also already help you out.
Yep. My now dead website.
Rest in peace.
I actually built a framework, but for the, not for the front end. It's more like the back end framework. So it would build my website based on the assets and stuff. It would optimize the images and serve like a minified version of the website. That's a lot of manual work. And I put it up open source on GitHub for people to check out. And you can use it too still. It's PHP based. It's not a front end framework. It's kind of like a back end framework where you give it a template, images, and it will read out all your files. And then it will like optimize it. It will do some things. You can also use it as a kind of a CMS.
That's fun.
You can like serve Markdown and it will convert that to HTML and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to get at is, you know, I didn't have to do that if I chose a framework.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to, at that time, I wanted to like know what a framework would have helped me with. And it was mostly the front end things back then. Nowadays, you have Next.js and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Next.js is React-based, but it doesn't give you a single page application. It gives you, the whole website is just split into small chunks, and it serves a static website for the most part. But you can,
with some reactive parts in it if you want it to.
Like it actually does transform the website to a completely JavaScript version because When you navigate in a Next.js website, you don't have a full page refresh. It will just imitate that through the browser history.
Yeah.
But it loads all the new pages in by just JavaScript instead of an actual navigation.
Request, yeah. Interesting.
Just as a side note. But so frameworks do not only the front end nowadays, but also the back end, like the routing, like the building, they also do things like optimizing images.
Yeah.
If you have an image while developing, it's like a huge image, like 8 megabytes.
Yeah.
If you use Next.js and use the image component correctly, it will actually serve it in a way that's well optimized for the final like build. Yeah. What are the things? Because like, I'm not saying frameworks are the way to go, but if you want to make something a bit more complex, it probably is the way to go for your project.
Yeah, I mean, of course, as soon as you start to do something like dynamic, at mm-hmm. least, then you will probably want a framework, because mm-hmm. writing that on your own is, you know, it's possible, but, you know, less fun.
Yeah, it's like reinventing the wheel.
Yeah, exactly. And it depends, but most times it will increase the speed of which you can build to. So,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, like I've built my website in Ostro, and that also it creates only static files. So it's very simple, and it also uses Markdown, and it will also optimize the images and all that stuff. So for me, like, it's a bit more than, like, I wouldn't want to build this in HTML. I could, I guess, but now I have like a really simple CMS behind it with Markdown, and I'll just save, and then it will automatically commit, and that commit will trigger a build, and then it will, you know, create all the static files. So it's very easy, and it was also very easy to achieve like a perfect score with Lighthouse because of that, because all the optimization is almost like by default on. So very simple.
Yeah. So why we brought this topic up in the first place is choosing the right tool to build your website is probably the number one most important thing when you're trying to achieve the 100% score in Lighthouse.
Mm.
If your framework is not something that will build to a static website that actually does code splitting and like image optimization and stuff like that, you're probably going to have a headache trying to get 100% score.
Yeah.
There's also other things like lazy loading components, which used to be something that made no sense. Like, if you think about how frameworks worked 10 years ago as a single page application, you would load the whole website in at once. The whole JavaScript is a package. So at the start of if you're navigating to that website, Facebook would take like 10 seconds to load in.
Yeah.
And at that point, they might show like a loading icon or like a spinning icon or whatever. But during that time, there's no interactable elements. And, you know, that was the experience. Single page applications. It's like opening an app on your phone.
Yeah, it had to load and you have to wait. Mm-hmm. And then it will be, you know, completely done afterwards, I guess. Or it will still load some things, but...
Yeah, it will load assets mostly. Yeah. But like the components and how the like interactions work and stuff are all loaded.
Yeah.
But nowadays, with Next.js, for example, since it builds React to static, how are you going to, you know, keep the website interactable beyond what's on that website?
Mm.
Like on the first page, you wouldn't have, for example, let's say a very complex component with like a music player. But on the about page, you want to have a music player.
Mm.
Are you going to load that music player on the homepage? That would have happened 10 years ago. But nowadays, you can actually make it only load that music player on the about page.
Yep.
And Next.js does that automatically. But there's also something called like lazy loading components, which is if you are on a big page and you have multiple types of components, and some of the components are not necessary to interact with directly. For example, you have a search and you're trying to show all the results. The result is in its own little card with an image and a button, and that card is a component. You might want to just use lazy loading because that component, it's maybe a few kilobytes without the image, because the image is still loaded client side.
Yeah.
That result, that card, is a few kilobytes, but the problem with like a lot of websites is the initial page load. That's why your score gets lower.
Yeah.
So focusing on lazy loading components.
That's a new word, lozing.
Lozing components. Like anything on your website has to be done in a way that it actually is going from top to bottom. So if something is not very important, let it, like, defer it to a later moment.
Yeah.
And components that you're not directly using immediately at the start of the page, they should probably be lazy loaded too. Nowadays you can do that with like React lazy loading there's a way to do that.
Yeah.
There's suspense to like hide the loading and show something in place of that component.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have a flash or a, what do you call it again? A shift, I guess.
Yeah, layout shift, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the order of how things load.
It's very important.
Very important.
Yeah.
And frameworks also help you with that. I've like built websites manually with a vanilla HTML, CSS, JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, if you use like a few libraries, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, an animation library, a font loading library,
yeah.
a few other libraries, you'll have like these three JavaScript, four JavaScript files. And how do you order them in a way that it goes from like most important, most critical to least important?
Yeah, I mean, by default, it would be like all loaded, right? Immediately.
Yeah, by default, it would, like, if your website needs a JavaScript file to interact, mm-hmm. it will load all the JavaScript files before you can interact with it.
Yeah.
And nowadays, you can do things like load the JavaScript, like put the JavaScript tag in the body tag at mm-hmm. the bottom.
Yeah.
That way, you will load in your HTML and CSS.
Beforehand, yeah.
Beforehand. Back in the day, you used to have it in your head.
Mm.
Or at the top of your body and stuff like that. And that still is relevant if you're trying to achieve certain things. Like, for example, Google, what's it called again? Google Analytics.
Mm.
Why do they still advocate to put it at the top? Because if you have a JavaScript error, it will not load. It will actually cancel the JavaScript thread.
Yeah.
So making sure that it will at least load the analytics and give that note, like, you know, hit the server once before the page crashes.
Yeah.
They have to ensure that it's at the top of the page on top of everything else.
Yeah. So it'll be loaded first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there's all these little tricks, and this is like for a function, like a practical thing, but mm-hmm. their JavaScript is pretty finicky with references.
Mm-hmm.
No, some references for variables are like not easily accessible depending on where you load the JavaScript.
Yeah.
The library might not be accessible yet if you put it at the bottom.
Yeah.
But you don't want to load it before your other JavaScript because that JavaScript is actually more important. So it's like you got to split up your code.
Yeah, you're like constantly juggling.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so these frameworks, they will help with mm-hmm. a lot of those issues too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it will help with changing the order of how things load. Again, also Lighthouse itself will tell you eventually that some scripts are loaded in the wrong order, or they tell you that there's a script that is blocking the rest mm-hmm. of the rendering of the page, for example.
Yeah, Lighthouse will tell you all that.
So it's a great tool to, you know, find those errors. Like for me, for some reason, Lighthouse always has been like a way to perform better for Google mm-hmm. because it is from Google, but that's not necessarily the point. I mean, it does some SEO checks mm-hmm. too, but it will mainly try to improve the performance and accessibility of your website. So that's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, assets, I guess. It also, we've already kind of touched on that, I guess. But yeah.
Well, let's quickly go through it because your framework is number one.
Yeah.
The next thing is, what is like the biggest chunk of data that you're transferring? It's actually more than your framework, more than your HTML, more than your CSS. It's probably your assets.
Yeah.
Your images, your videos, your whatever, like anything that's that doesn't come in text form.
Mm-hmm.
is assets.
Yeah.
And you can even say that some of the things like JavaScript, that's a library, you can call that an asset if you want.
Sure.
But the main few things are, try to minimize your HTTP requests, mm-hmm. which means don't have like 100 files you got to load.
Yeah.
Just make sure that you're using HTTP2
mm-hmm.
as well, because that will actually create a stream of data and it won't request multiple a new HTTP request every time there is an asset. So it will actually load a ton faster, by the way. I think any kind of modern popular hosting company like Vercel and stuff has HTTP2.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good point, I think. But we'll get back to that with the best practices. Optimize images. That's a big one. Still, it's kind of tricky.
Yep.
Because some of these file extensions, some of these image like compression methods are not easily achievable. Mm. Like back in the day, JPEGs were like the only way to actually like host, like serve images and show it on the client for photography.
Yeah.
And then you would use PNGs for transparency.
Yeah, mainly for like border radius and mm-hmm. all that good stuff.
And that's it, right? Like that was it mostly, JPEGs and PNGs.
Yeah.
Nowadays you have WebPs and there's so many other formats that like, I think AVIF. Yeah, AVIF is also a new one, which is like a AV1 compression method. And and browsers also use that nowadays. So depending on what kind of tool you're using, you're going to have a different compression method and a different extension for your files.
Yeah, I don't think it matters that much which compression you use if you just, at least use compression. So that's the most important.
Yeah, I think so. Lighthouse checks all your images and checks if, for example, I think even PNGs nowadays, if they are compressed,
exactly.
in a more efficient compression method than PNG or JPEG.
It will also tell you that if you like compress this image, it will save you this amount of data, for example. It also does the same with sizes, I think, that it says like, hey, this image is really big, like resolution wise. Yeah. And it will say, well, your screen is this wide, so you don't need it this big.
Exactly.
This is a better size for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oversized images that get rescaled.
Yeah.
It will notify you about that.
And I also noticed that it always it complains a lot, for me at least, about setting the width and height on images. I almost never do that because, you'll fix that with CSS.
Yeah, but that's also fine if you do that with CSS.
Well, the thing is, I think that's why he's complaining about it, is that it's a shifting, yeah. So if you set a width and a height, you will prevent the layout from shifting. So it makes sense.
Yeah. I think it's a good point. That's kind of a tricky situation where you, if you apply width and height and your CSS isn't loaded yet, then it will stay that width and height. But once your CSS loads, it will actually shift to the CSS sizes. So I'm kind of like not sure how to approach that one directly. But frameworks help with that.
Hey, surprise.
Frameworks actually read out the size of your images.
Yeah.
And apply just a width and height, and then the CSS will load probably as fast as your component is like a single package.
Mm-hmm.
So when your component loads in, it will have the right size.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about that. Another thing is just the lazy loading we already mentioned.
Yeah.
Make sure you lazy load all your images. And you could argue that the critical CSS or critical images above the fold, they don't get lazy loaded.
Yeah, it also complains about that. I've had it too. I like on all my images, I put lazy loading because easy. But it said like try to prevent from lazy loading critical images.
Yes,
that are how do you call it above the fold.
Yeah.
I hate that term, but so yeah, I had to remove it, and then it was happy about it. So it's also fun that it scans for that. It's pretty extensive.
Yeah. One last thing I want to mention is to make all of these methods work, lazy loading, having multiple sizes for images, with the image source set and stuff like that, you cannot use background images. So be aware of that. If you're going to use this technology, you're going to have to use like absolute positioned images inside divs or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, for like images, regular images, you should never use a background image.
But like in cards and stuff, we used to use background images. Like at the top and behind a title.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I always use regular image tag, but that's me, I guess.
I think it was pretty common to just use background images, from a CSS app. Like, for example, you would have an image uploaded in your WordPress.
Mm.
You would have your template.
Yeah,
you would have like a background image, mm. and then your URL. Then you would like inject the URL of the image.
Yeah, I guess.
I think that's still very common.
Like for me, the main reason why if I would use a background image, it was because fit?
Image size.
Yeah, like the fitting of images didn't stuff. Work. Yeah. Like you only could use a background size cover or container or whatever. Mm-hmm. So there was the only way to make an image you know, fit and scale properly.
Yeah.
But nowadays you don't need that because you have fit content, I think it's called. I don't remember what. That kind of fixed that problem for me at least.
Mm.
So yeah, don't use background images. I mean, it's fine if you have like, I think graphics and stuff like that are background.
Yeah.
It's also probably like less, it's a smaller size. So
yeah.
it's better. It's just regular images are always, multiple kilobytes. Mm-hmm. So that's probably best to lazily load.
Yeah.
And you can't do that with CSS, so.
Nope. What else do we have?
Caching, that's an important one.
Yes, caching is something that gets forgotten until you get a notification in Lighthouse.
Yeah. Also something that kind of, not necessarily happens by your framework. I mean, frameworks do, like Next does it, I think, but...
I don't think so.
Is it all... Maybe it's only like the platforms where you deploy.
Yeah.
So Vercel, I guess, does it.
Yeah. So caching, what we're talking about is how files get preserved in your browser.
Mm-hmm.
And if your browser is going to download a new version, by default, depending on the settings, of course, but like by default, when you refresh a page, it will reload the HTML, the CSS, the JavaScript, the images, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I think browsers nowadays, by default, don't re-download the images if they have the same file name, but they will re-download the HTML. I don't know if they do the CSS and JavaScript, but HTML definitely they will reload. The caching policies that are applied by default are not good enough for Lighthouse.
Mm.
I would argue that it's a bit excessive because you gotta like tell your server to send a notification to the client that your file is not going to be adjusted for a year.
Yeah.
Or more even, like minimal a year. And it's like, yeah, okay, your website is going to not change for a year. And the thing is, this is the funny thing. Your every time you build, it will create a new signature for that file. It will change the file name.
Yeah.
So it will re-download that file.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you're not rebuilding your website or committing or whatever, for example, in your situation, if you recommit, your homepage and everything that gets affected will get a new file name.
Yeah.
So the browser will automatically download those, but not the things that haven't been adjusted.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the funny thing is like the caching is two ways. It's how you name things, but also the policies you apply for the files. Because most of the time, what Lighthouse asks you to do is put everything at the longest lifetime possible. Mm. It's not going to expire for years.
Yeah.
But if it expires, change the file name so it will automatically re-download. It doesn't care anymore about the caching policy.
Yeah. I think maybe you already said that, but like a lot of frameworks already do that.
Mm-hmm.
They change the file name for you. So it knows that it has to be refreshed. So.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's good to just double check your caching policies, see if they are at least a year, like every file that you serve, the MIME types and stuff stay for at least a year valid as the last version.
I'm pretty sure I haven't even looked at it because it just, this is a framework and Vercel all take care of it. So I haven't paid any attention to caching.
I think
we should do a two-parter of this.
It's quite a lot we're going to go through. So
yeah, it's also a very important tool. So
mm-hmm. That's probably like my number one tool to check if I've done my job.
If you've done your job well.
Exactly. At all.
Well, if you haven't written anything, you know, you haven't done your job, but you know.
Yeah, stay tuned for part two of this episode of achieving 100% Lighthouse score.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.